little group.
Your Friday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Or you can use #250 on your mobile device and just say TCNT. Also, keep using that hashtag TCNT on Twitter. And when you do, make your prediction as to who you think's going to win the news quiz at 835. Will it be Brian McDaniel? Will it be Brian Miller? Will it be producer Sam Sansevier, who's totally chill?
I'm super chill all the time.
Oh, totally chill.
All the time.
Like, she doesn't take the news quiz seriously at all.
Not at all.
Not even a little bit. Nope. She hardly tries.
Yeah.
And if you correctly predict the winner, you will be entered into a drawing for tickets to Acme Comedy Company tomorrow night.
We are wrapping up Sam's top five on number five. It's not a joke. Representative Aaron May Quaid reacts to the harassment survey that was done with the legislature. We had the new House Majority Leader, right, DFL Melissa Hortman, saying that those that didn't take the new training would be kept off committees. We talked about that yesterday. And Aaron May Quaid was obviously responding to the survey that we pointed out was only done by half of the House members, less than half of the House members.
Half.
And again,
so it was one out of five of less than half of the respondents. There's so little reason to take this survey and treat it as if it is a definitive account of how people behave in the legislature.
And we'll get to a little bit more commentary on it, but I know, Sam, you have some more audio to share with the listener.
I do. So Aaron May Quaid chatted with Jana Shortall from Care 11. May Quaid has since left the legislature, but this report is very much because of her whistleblowing, according to the story. May Quaid's harassment came in unwanted text messages and whispers on the House floor. Whispers some had asked about out loud, questioning if they were just jokes that May Quaid didn't get.
First of all, if you have to tell me it's a joke, it's not a joke. It's not funny. But the second is that's just a way to dismiss the ways in which people in power often can demean other people and then get away with it. Commenting on my body on the floor while I'm speaking about an education bill isn't funny. It's not a joke.
And now a year after the consequence for those lawmakers she accused came, this report has come. She went on to say,
I think to know 70% of staff filled this out and these are the results that we're getting, there's an appetite to have a place to say, here's what's happening in our workplace. Here's what's happening in the Capitol where the people should be represented and safe.
This is what I don't understand. Okay. For one, I don't take this survey seriously. The reality is, if you have a legitimate complaint, then you need to go and address it the way that you already can go and address that. And we've seen the example of that happen with the two individuals last year. What I don't get is what it is that they are getting out of this. I mean, I'm genuinely curious as to whether or not, like, the Aaron May Quaids or the Melissa Hortmans, like, are they really, really wanting to get at the root of the problem and fix it? Or is it just we're in power now, we're gonna stick it in? Because the left, let me back up, because I'm all over the place. Well, let me get to the point here. The left wants to punish. That's what the left wants to do. Okay, it's not enough to hold people accountable. You know, they were held accountable last year. You had Cornish and
Dan Schoen.
Those individuals were called out, held accountable, mm-hmm. right? And
the system worked.
Had to face the consequences.
The system worked.
But it's never enough. It's like, okay, that's all fine and dandy, but we have to now punish everybody. Everybody has to be held accountable, even if you didn't do anything wrong. And that's, to me, what the incoming House Majority Leader and Melissa Hortman is doing in saying, well, you know, if you think that you're above going and taking these courses, which already take place in other ways, then I'm going to keep you off of committees. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a further reinforcement of what we talk about the left is so keen on doing. It's not enough to have somebody apologize. It's not enough to have somebody held accountable. Nope. You also have to be punished.
Well, the worst thing that can happen when it comes to something like, you know, sexual harassment, it was a good thing when the the conversation of sexual harassment sort of reached that national discourse, and everybody sort of became a little more aware of behaviors that are that should be considered unacceptable, behaviors that should be in a, that should be broadly considered inappropriate for the workplace. But then it got politicized. Then it got politicized, and when something gets politicized, it always gets weaponized, right? And then it becomes a situation where it becomes easy to dismiss, because when something becomes politicized, people on one side stop caring when their side is guilty of it.
Right, right.
And they only care when the other side is guilty of it. And everything gets politicized these days. I'll use the Micah Brzezinski comments as an example, when she made a homophobic slur regarding Mike Pompeo on The Morning Joe on MSNBC. You know, she called him a homophobic slur, which, you know, should be called out and should be pointed at. And it doesn't mean you have to scorch the earth around her and ruin her life. It should be like, sure, hey, Micah, that was inappropriate.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that.
Right.
That is not an appropriate thing to call somebody, you know, on a, as you, when you're an anchor of a national cable news broadcast. And, you know, slap her on the wrist and let her learn a lesson and move on. But time and time again, I saw the reaction be, yeah, but Trump. I mean, yeah, she said it, but, you know, you guys are terrible. Like, Nick Zerwas tweeted something out about it, saying, you know, retweeted something about how it was an inappropriate comment and it should be called out. And that hack Aaron Rupar used to write for the City Pages, now he's with Think Progress, immediately replied to Zerwas' tweet, yeah, that would carry a lot more weight if your party didn't hate gay people so much.
Wow.
You know, and it's just, it's so frustrating when issues that everyone should care about and everyone should take seriously become politicized and become weaponized. And I'm worried that that's what's going to be happening with the sexual harassment issue, you know, when it comes to legislators. They're going to hang it over people's heads, and I am waiting for the first time, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen, you know, this session, I would predict, when some piece of legislation gets voted down or doesn't get heard, and the author of it says, well, clearly it's because I'm a woman, and this is just a big boys club.
We talk often about the lack of pointing to human behavior in decision-making when it comes to the government and laws and the minimum wage, right? The factoring in of human behavior. In my opinion, the way that they're handling this with sexual harassment with in a lot of different cases, and certainly with the Minnesota the legislature, you're doing a disservice. You're doing a disservice because these are individual circumstances. If you want to have the biggest impact on the perpetrator of the unwarranted, unwelcomed, and potentially offensive sexual advances, you address that one-on-one with the person to whom you're dealing with, mm-hmm, and hold that person accountable, because that person really doesn't want to be uncomfortable. They're heading down a particular road for a particular reason. Those reasons might be wrong, but if you want to have the biggest impact on them, they need to be addressed directly and held accountable.
Yeah.
When you start throwing everybody under the same umbrella, when you start, yep, forcing individuals that don't partake in this behavior, that already know it's wrong, you're stripping away the ability to have anybody go and take you seriously.
And let's, you know, and if we're going to have this conversation, let's have the conversation about how there are different degrees of sexual harassment. There are different degrees of offense. Somebody making an inappropriate comment, you know, while somebody's on the House floor, like Aaron May Quaid referenced, it's inappropriate, and they should be talked to, and they should be told, look, that's unprofessional and inappropriate, and it can't happen again. Doesn't necessarily mean their career needs to be destroyed. Doesn't mean that they need, you know, to have, like I said, to have the earth scorched around them. Then, but the other side of that is, when somebody's actually using their power over a female colleague or subordinate and saying, you know, if you don't go along with these advances, then I am going to harm your career, that is grounds for dismissal. You know, you want to scorch the earth around somebody, you scorch the earth around that person. That's why, you know, when she says, you know, I had a similar thing happen to me with the Harvey Weinstein. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't. You know, we all saw the text messages. We all saw what happened between you and Tony Cornish. Tony Cornish, to the best of my recollection, did not try to use his power and his standing as a more veteran, experienced senior member of the legislature to try to hold your career down unless you engaged in, unless you entertained his sexual advances.
Right.
I don't recall any instance of that. That's what Harvey Weinstein did. You know, he made aspiring young actresses do things they did not want to do under the threat of ending their career. You had some randy text messages and some inappropriate comments that, by all indications, did not impact your ability to address, to introduce or advocate for legislation.
And to me, the better way to look, if you were so offended, you wanted to take appropriate measures, and you did. You hold the individual accountable for that. But unfortunately, Drew, the conversation that we're having, and we talked about this in the middle of the hashtag MeToo movement, at the height of it. We're not even really allowed, doing that thing with my fingers, to have this particular conversation. I'm sure there are people listening right now that are doing the, yeah, but you support that guy. Oh, yeah, but who are you? You're just two white dudes. Who are you to go and say that? No, if we're going to be adults about it, because in my opinion, we haven't been being adults about it. If you're going to be adults about it, you need to be able to talk about the varying degrees. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to discuss the fact that one person's sexual harassment is another person's turn on. Some people are okay with that, and sometimes you don't know. I'm not justifying it by any stretch of the imagination, but normally you can stop that at the point of contact.
Right. Oh, hey, that thing you just said, or
too far,
you just texted me, or that thing,
don't do it again.
That's inappropriate. Please don't do that.
Stop.
And that's going to end like 90% of it right
there. Right there.
That's going to end like 90% of it. But when you playfully sort of go along with it, then you are opening that door to it being taken to the next level and being taken to the next level.
Yeah, and I really do think that it's this survey is completely unnecessary. Getting back to the core of the issue in Sam's Top 5 with this sexual harassment survey that was done in the legislature, it's unnecessary. We're not just tackling this particular issue right now for the very, very first time. We already have mechanisms in place to go and deal with it. And what
as
you're
doing, we saw with Cornish and
as we saw with those guys last year. Yeah. And all, in my opinion, all you're doing is you're making matters worse because you're ticking off a bunch of individuals that already know this is bad behavior and
have never engaged in it themselves.
And feel like you're lumping them in and forcing them into situations that they don't need to go through. Right. And it takes away the power from the legitimate claims. And that's ultimately what I'm saying. The person that has a legitimate complaint, the moment that gets brought forward now, someone's going to put a big old question mark on it.
Because it has been politicized.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were stormed.
Whew.
A moment ago.
Brian's storming the studio.
Storming the beaches of Justice and Drew.
Yeah, we had an invasion of Brian's.
What's up, beaches?
Brian McDaniel from Wrong About Everything.
Hey, guys.
Brian Miller from stages all over the country.
From Nebraska last night, yeah.
Nebraska last night?
Fremont, Nebraska.
Last night?
Yeah, I drove to Nebraska for 6 hours. I did, night before last. I'm sorry, before last.
Oh, I was going to say, did you just drive from Nebraska?
Yeah, I just got here. Boy, are my arms tired.
It feels like it just happened because it keeps happening again and again in my mind.
How was Nebraska?
After the show, I genuinely considered, I already had a hotel, but it was so bad, I genuinely considered leaving the state just to like recamp somewhere else. So I was like, a couple hours into Iowa, regroup, get a Snickers bar, go to sleep.
The hotel was bad or the event was bad?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah, bad hotels are the worst.
I wound up. Yeah, oh, yeah, this one was really bad. Really bad for a lot of gross reasons. And then at the show, I was a clean show, and then there was a heckler, and I wound up maybe using a word or two. They're not supposed to use it at a clean show. Nope. And then when the guy was like, "What are you doing, man?" And I said, "You can pay the champ to shadow box, but only until you take a swing." The guy was like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah, give me my check now."
So when you go out on the road, getting a place to stay is probably standard at a gig, right? You get booked at a club, yep, and the club says, you know, we'll make sure you get a place to stay, right?
Almost always they have a hotel or a condo occasionally that the comics will stay in. Yeah.
Is it common or uncommon for that hotel to be a little under the standards you would normally book for yourself?
We'll see. Usually, it's pretty. You can tell the hotel by the gig. They usually match up pretty well. You're like, oh, this club's pretty nice. I like this place. Then the hotel will be nice, right?
Okay.
But sometimes you're like, oh man, this is a terrible club, and these people are terrifying, and the hotel matches. but this one was a corporate, so it was just they just give you a check, and then you know I rent my own hotel. Okay. So this was kind of on me. I was trying to save a little extra cash, and I went with it wasn't as super as it was promised in the name, let's say.
It was 7.5 tops.
There were like many, many holes in the wall of my room, but they had been loosely spackled, but then they'd been repainted with a completely different color paint. So it looked like the wall had some sort of weird skin disease.
Did you look for a camera lens on the other side of some of them?
Yeah, there were no cameras anywhere, which is actually my concern.
It's like the neighborhoods when they deal with a really bad graffiti problem, and then you have the community comes forward and does all the cleanup, but the paint doesn't match it all, so it's just this patchwork of squares all right. over the yep. graffiti all over the walls everywhere. Yeah, anyway.
It was like almost like an Argyle wall, but in like three different colors.
There were two quick, talking about bad hotels really quick. There was two things that popped into mind. One, during the dark years, I remember Orange County wanting to watch the New Year's fireworks close to Disneyland, going to a hotel, going through the door, and then seeing that the black and white TV that was on the stand in the corner of the room had the heaviest chain, like the big, thick chain attached to it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm out. And the other one was a hotel I went to, and I walked to the bathroom, and the bathroom door, see if you guys can guess, the bathroom door had this massive notch in it. Had a huge notch in the bathroom door. The reason why, they built it wrong. It was the only way, because it opened to the inside, it was the only way they could get it past the toilet.
Oh!
What? Was to put a massive hole in the door so that you could open it up.
I was at a hotel in Rochester, Minnesota, and I flipped on the bathroom light, and the bath towels were covered in bloodstains.
Oh, my gosh!
So I called the front desk. True story. I called the front desk, and I was like, yeah, my bath towels are covered in bloodstains. And the woman goes, well, are they fresh?
No.
And I was like, yeah, that's not the issue. And then she goes, well, what do you want?
Shouldn't be your first question.
She goes, what do you want me to do about it? And I was like, well, we'll start with new towels. We'll start there and then move on. We'll
see what
Yeah.
That's insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, we are getting ready for the news quiz coming up in a little over an hour. Your contestants are all in the house. Brian Miller, how confident are you feeling this morning?
I would say yes, but McDaniel usually helps me out because he pulls some answers away from Sam.
Okay.
But then Max was doing that last week, too, and I still lost. So I
still lost, yeah. It was close, though. It came so down close. To the last
I
question.
Was like the Chiefs last night.
Brian McDaniel, you want to give the listeners any reason why they should vote for you?
Well, because absent all of these mystery points that you give Sam and Brian, when I get to an early lead, I would have won.
Yeah, so why don't you earn some mystery points?
Because I get the real points, then you feel bad for them.
Ooh,
I know how this works.
Things are tense.
Angry.
Holy cow.
Why would they feel bad for me and Sam since we win every time?
I haven't won long time.
Have some cookies during the break.
Yeah, those are nice.
Right there. Yeah,
Sam, open. Why should listeners vote for you this week?
I mean, I am on a streak.
Speaking of streaks, we'll keep with the theme coming up. Next, a New York Times writer says, cancel all Christmas parties so that women can avoid the harassment.
Just cancel them.
We'll also get into a university that's making comedians sign a safe space agreement.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
We'll give you all the details next on Justice and Drew.
Day.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Your Friday edition, your Friday rendition, I'm sorry. Your Friday rendition.
Remix.
Of Drew.
Backup singers are in.
That's right. We've got our choir girls. Chorus girls.
Rude.
Brian McDaniel.
Now you made it weird.
That's, you know what? That's one less bonus point for you right there.
Oh, wow. Wow. Points already.
Wow. Wait, so now are you starting at negative points now?
I'm a martyr.
Yeah. Now I'm going to take it in order to Sam. Not really.
Comedian Brian Miller and, of course, producer Sam Sansevier, and they're pushing our buttons this morning.
That's me.
Daily Wire. It's the least wonderful time of the year, says New York Times columnist Jennifer Weiner.
The novelist?
Brian. Oh, come on.
What?
The novelist, I assume?
It must be.
She's a really good novelist.
I think that tells you a lot of the between the two Bryans, because you've got the one Brian that just laughs this at is the just, name.
Yeah, he gives the beeps and buttheads. Yeah.
And then you've got the other Brian who's like, the novelist?
In a
pick his up.
Recent recent
that's not my pinky.
Op-ed. The source of her scroogey disposition, office Christmas parties. She uses the politically correct term holiday party because of all the sexual harassment that women face. According to Wiener, the prospect of the holiday party
children
is a difficult one. Grow up, you guys. Is a difficult one.
Why wouldn't you change your name?
For women, due to the difficult task of doing that thing with my fingers, choosing clothes that signal that you are polished without being boring, attractive without being provocative, and that you're looking to be promoted, not propositioned.
No. You're being dramatic.
Sam, how many work function, not necessarily just holiday party, you've been to work functions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is that a challenge for you of when you are deciding how you want to dress?
Choosing clothes that signal being polished without being boring, attractive without being provocative, and looking to be promoted, not propositioned?
No. I don't know. I don't struggle with that. I just don't. I just put on clothes and go.
Wouldn't all those problems exist in the workplace if they exist? Like, yes. I don't know why they would not exist and then all of a sudden manifest in the Christmas party.
Well, yeah.
She also, I looked it up. Jennifer Wiener sucks. I think I said it on the radio. She's a really bad novelist. I was thinking Mona Simpson. She's a really bad writer.
I confuse the two different all the time. Names.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like...
He's talking about Homer's mom.
When you...
That happens with us authors on occasion.
Nice. Elbow patch high five. Yeah. We're going to touch patches.
I don't know. It's like when you're trying to figure out an outfit to wear to, whether it's a work function, a holiday party, or anything, it's like, okay, so if it's anything that you have to kind of dress up for, it's like, as long as you don't just go with a t-shirt and jeans, or you don't dress super slutty, those are like the two ends of the spectrum, at least for me. But like, there's a lot of in between there that's fine. So I don't stress about it.
Far be it from me to be HR here, but I think that the difference is that you're adding alcohol to an equation. So I agree with Brian that probably a lot of these things manifest themselves in the workplace at a lower level.
Yeah, if they're in the culture of the workplace, they're in the culture of the workplace, and they aren't going to be reserved to only happen at a holiday party or a function like that.
And we'll get to that, because later on in the story, they actually talk extensively about the Vox Media's holiday party and what they did to avoid that problem, which just sounds like a really, really crappy party.
I was going to say, I would not want to go to a party with the Vox.
Oh, wait until you hear what they did with this. But real quick, this next line, and I'm gonna wade into these waters cautiously, because I know I can speak for me, and I think I can speak somewhat for Drew, but... Wiener went on to say this. For women, it's never easy, she says, adding that men have it all figured out when it comes to festive wear. Shut up.
Nope.
No.
What is your go-to for festive wear as men?
I have no idea.
We belabor...
I have no idea.
And I know it's not as bad as women or anything like that, but man, I have just as many struggles when it comes to going to functions and stuff like that about what I'm going to put on and what I'm going to wear and what's appropriate. And we've had this conversation.
I struggle with it because first of all, I hate wearing suits.
Well, I just,
you can always just default to a suit. Like, you can always default to, all right, I'm going to put on not like a really nice suit, but a business appropriate suit. But I hate wearing suits.
Yeah.
So for me, it's always that struggle of like, well, how formal, how nice do I want to dress, but still be comfortable?
I do want to stress, it's a different struggle. We're not worried about what we're wearing over fears of being propositioned. I want to make sure that's clear.
It's a different mindset.
Before we move on, the struggle is real on both sides for very drastically different reasons.
Okay. Speak for yourself,
John. One too many buttons unbuttoned on this shirt, the 80s are going to go wild.
I just feel like for guys...
No, I don't have that concern.
I think that for guys, it's like you have like three levels. You have your t-shirt and jeans, or sweatshirt and jeans. We'll kind of lump those together. Or you have your t-shirt with a suit jacket over it. Or you have your suit. And then I guess you also have your tuxedo, so we'll say four.
But there's always one or two guys who actually have some, like, fashion pizzazz. They got, like, the cool socks and, like, the one little accoutrement that works just well.
Right.
Like, or, like,
you
see a cool
guy
tie.
And you're like, that guy looks great. And you're like, I look terrible. Which I think is similar, right? I would. That's probably in any office. There's probably a couple of women who have like awesome fashion sense, and then most of the ladies are probably nicely dressed ish, like we are, and they're going like, "Oh, I wish I was as cool looking as that super cool lady."
I was at an event last week, and Javier from the podcast was on the same panel that
He's
I was.
A sharp dresser,
yeah. And one of the people that was at the event came up, and it was kidding, but it wasn't. Saying, well, Brian, you kind of didn't dress up for the event the way that Javier did. But, you know, he had flair.
Wow.
What? I know. I think Javier has some good flair.
Yeah, no, he has flair.
He dresses very well.
Ultimately, it didn't hurt my feelings because, whatever. But, but it happened.
That's like a weird, very personal attack.
I know.
People
don't like me.
Earlier this week on CBS This Morning, Wiener said that she would prefer it if the office holiday party was canceled entirely so that women could have more money in their paycheck instead of having to stress over what to wear.
That's not how a holiday party
is. Why are we having holiday parties at all? She wondered out loud. Wouldn't you rather have an extra $100 on your paycheck than have to go be social with the guy with the stale coffee breath who's looking at your backside every time you go to the copier?
This is definitely someone who, like, one, has no friends. Two, doesn't get along with anybody, and that's why she has no friends. And three, would not get invited to any party except for office parties because she's like, I mean, they're like obligated to invite her.
I would gladly pay $100 not to have to go.
Well, by the way, I don't think these are mandatory. Somebody like frog marching Jennifer Wiener down the block with a gun to the back of her head, like, you will drink eggnog and enjoy it. I'm pretty sure you can just not go. I don't go to things all the time. There's a big Christmas party this weekend. I'm not going.
Yeah. There's probably a ton you're not going to.
Yeah, but there's one I actually got invited to. That doesn't happen very often. Yeah. I'm not going.
Is the option.
I like the people that invited me.
To be fair, there is a bit of a trade-off, right? I mean, there is professional advantages to be had to going to functions like this, depending on where you work, right? You know, it's the networking, it's the being visible, it's the building relationships with people that can help advance your career. There is a trade-off, but you're right, it isn't mandatory.
Well, and clearly, the New York Times columnist Jennifer Wiener just needs to have her office holiday party and go to one at Acme Comedy Company.
Yeah, she would just do this at Acme
Comedy. You got the fantastic staff there. It's going to take care of all the problems, you know, people.
Any issues.
No, not at all. We'll get into the horribleness of
different options for food.
Oh, that's right, I know. Right? Yeah, I know. It's just one place. You don't have to go to a bunch of different places.
You might even get lucky and see Brian Miller, depending on when you have it.
Well, I'm skipping out on parties, so I'll probably be there doing a guest spot. Actually, a little plug, Dwight Slade is there this week.
Yeah.
Fantastic. One of my favorites, so if you get a chance to see Dwight Slade.
Well, and the winner of whoever picks the correct winner of the Friday news quiz will be entered into a drawing to see Dwight Slade tomorrow night.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Coming up, we'll keep it this a bit. We'll talk about this horrible Vox holiday party, the safe space agreement for comedians, and there was multiple crashes that took place on a New Jersey highway yesterday for a very odd reason. We'll tell you why coming up. If your hand was a liquid dispenser. Welcome back to Twin Cities News Talk. It's what we call, I'm not a professional, but I believe a callback.
It is.
Last week, 651-989-5855. We do have the roundtable with us, Brian and Brian. Sam, all competing in the news quiz. About 1 hour from now.
Correct.
Which will be chance to pick up prizes.
Okay, yeah, that's what you're queuing me up for. Use the hashtag TCT on Twitter.
It's queuing you up for talking.
Like, threw it to me. And I
did.
Sure,
news quiz. This is your news quiz, man.
We have a pair of tickets to Acme Comedy Company to see Dwight Slade tomorrow night. If you correctly predict who's going to win the news quiz, use Twitter. Use the hashtag TCNT. Pick Brian, or Brian.
Yeah.
Or Sam. You can also email me at andrewlee@iheartmedia.com and get your pick in that way.
So we were talking about this Daily Wire story, right? Cancel Christmas parties so women avoid harassment. This is New York Times columnist Jennifer Wiener suggests this. She gave some advice on how women, Sam, can survive holiday parties, okay? Says this, do not drink, have a friend, have a plan. Like if that guy who checks out your butt as you go to the copier corners you, have a friend who will be looking out for you.
I don't know, this is a holiday party. You're not traveling across the world alone.
Is he supposed to stand in front of your butt? What's the friend supposed to do? Hurl themselves? Also, Is it qualitative? I'm not saying it's right, but is it qualitatively different that the guy's looking at your butt at the copier versus at the thing? I don't. I'm very confused
right,
about
yeah,
this.
I know. It's just.
Sudden. I'm not saying it doesn't happen or that it doesn't suck, but I just don't understand what the holiday party part of it has to do with apparently the serial harasser.
Yeah, I think that other Brian was on to something when he said that when alcohol is involved, I think that it becomes more of an issue. Most likely, I think people get bolder. People
inhibitions, yeah, sure. You know, get start getting stripped away.
Right,
start feeling more confident than you should.
Yeah, I do. But that being said, I do also feel like this woman is, I don't know, she's choosing to make this a much bigger issue than it actually is.
Yeah. The office holiday party, according to the Daily Wire story, has become a source of much debate. Some offices have resorted to taking some extreme measures to avoid any awkwardness. And so Vox.com, they underscored partygoers and what they will experience, right, in going to their party. And they put out a memo. Okay, so it goes like this. You ready? So, hello all. We invite you and a guest to join us at the Vox Media holiday party on December 12th, right, at Freehold. Details are on the invite. A note on alcohol at this event, it goes on to read. This year, at the request of many of you, we will ramp up the food and cut down on the drinks. There will be more past hors d'oeuvres to keep everyone well fed. And instead of an open bar, each attendee will receive 2 drink tickets with which they can get alcoholic drinks if they choose. After that, only non-alcoholic drinks will be available. You just get 2 drinks. And that's it. We recognize
it's better than none.
It is better than none. Yeah, it is.
Even though alcohol isn't always the reason for unprofessional behavior, creating an environment that encourages overconsumption certainly contributes to it. We hope that you all appreciate the spirit of this change, and we look forward to celebrating with you. Boy, why do I get the feeling that this party, right? And I guess we passed the date. I'd be curious to find out if this was one of the shortest Vox Media parties in history. Everyone gets their 2 drinks. All right, who wants to go out and get more drinks someplace else?
Oh, I'm assuming that's what everyone does.
Yeah. I mean, you'd assume. I think that there's lots of reasons, you know, not to be the killjoy here or other Brian, as Sam would call me. if I were having a party like this, I mean, yes, the sexual harassment part of the alcohol would weigh in, but also I'd be very worried about just drunk driving and things like that. There's lots of reasons to not be the person who supplies somebody with too much.
You are HR today.
A little bit.
Seriously. But he's right,
spell hero that HR. Yeah.
I think that, like, your general average person, it sucks because when you tell someone you can only have 2 drinks, then they're going to be like, but I want more. But, I mean, I feel like your average person at a holiday party, it's going to generally have, like, maybe 2 drinks, maybe 3.
I have been to a number of work holiday parties, work events, things like that. And, yes, 2 is appropriate.
Right. And then
I've never wanted to be that person.
No, I don't want to get too drunk around people I work with.
No.
Like right. that. It's not a great idea.
No.
I mean, to get, like, hammered, you know. Like, you get really blitzed with your buddies. You know.
Yeah. Yes. You do that at home.
But yeah. In the dark, alone, crying, sharing.
Watching Love Actually. Over and over.
Wait. Who were you standing outside the window of my house yet last weekend?
Drinking, actually.
I was watching Love Actually through the window.
Watching me cry.
No, I'm
consuming my alcohol.
I don't want to be woke Brian here, but, you know, one of the things, too, is that, you know, I've had 20 years of, you know, state capitol Christmas parties too. Not only am I somewhat identifying with Ms. Wiener, but also with Aaron May Quaid from your previous segment. So I should just go sit in the car.
Yeah, I mean, how many holiday parties do people actually want to go and stay at? You know what I mean? I mean, how many holiday office parties are ones where they're actually good? I in the middle of this whole conversation,
I can't think of a one.
That's like go for an hour and leave kind of thing.
I can't think of the last sort of big holiday party that actually occurred. I mean, there was that grouping of years that they were just non-existent.
Yeah.
There weren't any holiday parties anymore just because the companies couldn't afford it.
Yeah, that was the first thing to go after the crash in 2008.
Yeah,
comedians were complaining about. I have a weird perspective on this because
that's a good point.
I have been to probably more holiday parties than everyone in this building combined because I work holiday parties every year for 10 years. So I've seen pretty much the gamut of uptight to pretty rowdy.
Yeah.
I've been to a couple. I'm like, man, they're pretty loose up in this office party here, you know? But I've seen the gamut, and I've seen, maybe open bar might not honestly be the best idea. No. I think drink tickets plus cash bar is probably the way to go.
I agree 100%. I'm in the mindset, though, of, don't do it. Because it is kind of like, you do have that weird mix of people that are, some people are there because, hey, it's a party. Let's have a good time. Let's get crazy. And then other people are there is like because, well, I kind of have to make an appearance. Yeah. So it's a really awkward mix of people.
Well, another way to differentiate parties that could get out of control is that, you know, some workplaces don't make them, they don't allow spouses to go. Mm. And, you know, so if it's just the team, which I can understand why they do that, but if it's just the team, you kind of don't have, you know, adults that are kind of monitoring not only your activities, but other people's.
I want to go watch the whole time I've been having this conversation. I was thinking about sort of the delicate genius of The Office, and I want to watch the episode where they banned it and it was all boring. So Michael went out and got all the alcohol. Yeah. That's such a great episode.
I was thinking of the Christmas party in Scrooged. The one that Bill Murray walks through, but he's like not participating in it. Looks like the craziest 70s-ish, you know, everyone. Yeah. It looks like what they're trying to avoid now. Okay.
Reason.com. All right. Comedians invited to perform for charity at the University of London. You ever performed overseas?
No, I'm going to Canada. I guess not overseas yet. that's my farthest, my closest. I'm going over border.
Over lakes.
Yeah. Our friend Corey Adam just recorded an album in Iceland last week. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would nothing I want to wipe out on this, but I just would be curious, like as a comedian, if you were going to go and travel overseas in terms of material.
Oh, it's tough.
Yeah, you'd have to really adjust accordingly.
I've heard in Canada you have to like really, because you know certain, like, you know, if you make a Dunkin' Donuts reference, it's like, well, you got to say Tim Hortons. Mm-hmm. Like even subtle changes, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah. The University of London, they were required to sign a behavioral agreement that stipulated love, joy, and acceptance would be the themes of the performance.
Did they say, oh, behave?
I know. Take these up.
Big British thing that they say over there.
This is comedy night. This comedy night aims to provide a safe space for everyone to share and listen. Read the form. It was reported by PJ Media, one of the invited comedians. Konstantin Kissin. Does that ring a bell to you? No, at all?
No. I don't know hardly any British comedians unless they're Tim Minchin.
By signing this contract, you are agreeing to our no-tolerance policy in regards to racism, sexism, classism, ageism, ableism, homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, or anti-religion or anti-theism, the form continued.
So you can do Jim Gaffigan's act.
Yeah.
That's what's left. Just put on the latest Jim Gaffigan CD.
Yeah.
Call it
even Brian Regan might cross over into that. Somebody might be like, that's a little too much for me.
Who's the puppet guy? Jeff Dunham.
Actually, he's
out on the Islamophobia part of it.
Yeah.
That's
I forgot about that.
That whole act. His act is gone.
Yeah. Oh, your lipstick God's ear.
The event in
Gallagher could probably do this.
Oh, I would like to see Gallagher smash Jeff Dunham's puppets while his arms are still in them, you know, like Goodfellas style.
Oh my gosh. Like, things went dark.
That is messed up.
Things went dark.
Yeah, make sure you get your tarps in the front row for that one.
Oh yeah.
I got Jeff Dunham all over me.
We've talked about this before, but have either of you guys experienced when it comes to, because we were talking obviously about sexual harassment before, and but I'm curious if how much of that has seeped into the comedy world at this point in time. I mean, maybe not even like directly, but how conscious are you when you're crafting material of I got to call this particular joke into question now.
Well, I would never make a joke. I try to never have a joke that wouldn't espouse a sentiment ultimately that I don't agree with.
Sure.
Maybe I might take a fun sideways route there.
Right.
But so I just feel like, well, that's what I believe. I'm just going to say what I believe.
Right.
If people are offended, the problem is now Maybe I believe the wrong thing. I'm not saying that's the barometer I use, but you go, oh, well, that's the only moral compass I can use, I guess. Yeah. Just to say. But well, it's funny.
Let me rephrase the question a certain way. Have you ever had people take offense to your material, and has that caused you to call into question, you know, what went into crafting that material?
Yes, and a couple of times I've gone, you know, I probably shouldn't do that joke or that one little tag. Usually I go, nah, they're idiots. I'm going to keep doing it. Okay. I'm not going to, just because they don't. But I just got a writer for a casino. I just talked to my buddy Nate Abshire about this. We're doing the same casino 1 month apart. He goes, did you get that writer? I said, yeah. It was like, you will not comment on anyone's sexual orientation. You will not comment on anyone's physical appearance. You will not comment on anyone's fashion choices. Yeah. But it was weird because, it was like that, but at a casino show. And Nate and I were both laughing because we were like, oh, who hurt them? Like, there's definitely one comedian who did something that caused them to institute. Somebody got hammered and did something wrong.
So, and they're referring to comments that you make about the audience in front of you. Then, right?
Yes. Yeah. You're like, okay. Basically, and they were like, there should be no physical contact with the audience of any kind of a sexual nature, but you should refrain from any physical contact because it might be construed as that. I'm thinking, who's going into the audience and hugging people?
Somebody stage diving?
Somebody got hammered.
Crowd surfing? Weird.
Well, people are getting hit with watermelons left and right. Well, and as kind of a new comedian, you know, I'm still, on some level, still learning kind of what the boundaries are. What I have found, though, is that, you know, to answer your question, Jew, has anyone ever brought anything up to me? Yes, they have. And I kind of did afterward kind of see what their point was. The joke was fine. It was just kind of like when I told it after something that was in the news, I just didn't connect them. But what I found is that it's not the audience I'm worried about offending. It's other comedians. And they seem to be the ones, and I, you know, watch the you know, the Twitter and the Facebook fights that I'm not in the middle of, but I watch how, you know, there is kind of a debate with certain groups of the comedy community that are, you know, kind of policing people's material.
I imagine the majority of people that go to see a comedy act, it's the person, if you're going with multiple people, the person organizing it is not the problem. If you're going to run into any problem, it's the person who got brought along that wasn't necessarily would have gone in the first place. Anybody who's choosing on their own to go see a comedy act, you know what you're in for. You're not going to worry about it. But if they're bringing, hey, why don't you come? That's the people that you're going to have the issue.
Some people just don't really like stand-up, and that's totally fine, you know? But that's the trouble with like any corporate party. We're talking about office parties. When I do these, is at least half the people probably don't even like this art form.
Yeah, this is not something they would choose to go see.
Which is, there's stuff I don't choose. I don't go to ballet. It doesn't mean I don't think other people shouldn't go.
Coming up, we do have the Friday News Quiz right around 8:30 this morning. Get your picks in on who you think is going to win, Brian, or Sam. You use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. We'll get to the story of the multiple crashes on the New Jersey highway and what caused it. And a proposal to give Minneapolis City Council more police control suffers. Oh, it's unfortunate. Another setback. Oh, and then more people telling them what a horrible idea that was.